Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Red Men Weekly. And it is a new manager search special. Of course, the Reds are very much going for the Premier League title. And of course, the Europa League business end is right around the corner. But there is the small matter of Jurgen Klopp's successor still to be decided. So we have got you covered from every possible angle this week. And it is, of course, and Nagel's maybe. So yeah, I've been speaking to lots of different people across the platform over the past few days, and we begin with Gillian Balague, who told us why Xabi Alonso has decided to stay at Bayer Leverkusen for one more season.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Redmen TV. My name is Dan Clubb, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the brilliant, the wonderful Gillian Balague. Gillian, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm all right, Dan. I'm okay. Great presentation. Thank you.
No, absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for your time. I know it's very, very precious. Let's dive straight into it, I guess, then, really. Obviously, when we first touched base about this conversation last week, it was going to be, will Xabi Alonso potentially come to Liverpool Football Club at the end of the season? Obviously, as we now know, he has confirmed his intention to stay at Bayer Leverkusen. First off, I mean, what a coup for Bayer Leverkusen. They must be absolutely over the moon that Xabi Alonso's committed himself to them. Were you surprised by this at all? And I guess, given the levels of speculation around Liverpool, Bayern Munich, even Real Madrid, do you think that's influenced Xabi Alonso? Do you think he knows about all that noise?
Oh, he does. He does. And in fact, that in my eyes is what has speed up the decision. I published 24 hours before his decision, that the plan was very clear. And it had to do with the following four games, two in the league, the semi-finals of the Cup, and the Europa League. And less than 24 hours later, he announces that he's staying at Bayer Leverkusen. Mm-hmm. So I was shocked, not to say another word, when I heard that, just because the information came from his closest. Obviously, you cannot disclose the sources, but you know, it cannot be any closer. And that was, it's part of the people, let's put it that way, that were discussing with him the future. So I wonder what had happened. And what had happened is that my story, like other stories, had actually put more pressure to the whole situation. And in fact, the need to get everybody focused forced Xavi his hand in a way. I think ideally he would have had all that time to prepare. He did say that he had spoken to Bayer Leverkusen, so he knew what Bayer Leverkusen wanted. Quite clearly, Liverpool, Bayern Munich also had put forward their intentions. And he wanted to perhaps even test himself, I don't know, check how the squad and his team responded to the very, very important games to then take a decision. But even though he's, how can I put it, He's calm in many aspects, and I think the decision is one that suggests that he, you know, he's also very honest about the level that he's at.
Yeah.
He prefers to stay in a place where he has been respected, has been adored, really, and where the people in charge were giving him what he expects to keep improving. All that is clear. But I also felt that they went like, you know what? It's time to decide now. Even though he may have had in the back of his mind that Bayer Leverkusen was the next step, to stay at Bayer Leverkusen was the next step, and testing the side would have been perhaps a way to see at what level he was and at what level the squad was. I think he just went like, you know, well, let's do it now. Let's do it now. So within 24 hours, less than that, their planning changed. And they decided that if he's gonna we're gonna stay in Bayer Leverkusen anyway, let's announce it now and take the pressure for everyone and allow the noise that you described to disappear. And that's what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I guess that's taken away any doubts whatsoever, as you rightfully say. It's put an end to the speculation from a Liverpool point of view, from a Bayern Munich point of view as well. And it was fascinating how, with so much noise around it, like we've been having conversations about it, it's been in the media, of course. It was interesting to see how Xabi Alonso and, of course, his players would react, but they've reacted in the best possible way. They've carried on winning football games. They remained undefeated. Like, for all intents and purposes, Thomas Tuchel, the Bayern Munich manager, gave up the Bundesliga title race over the weekend after they were beaten. Obviously, Leverkusen won again. So his squad, his group, have reacted in the best possible manner, as they say. But it's interesting how he's chosen at this point to come out and just put an end to all the speculation, as you rightfully say. And in terms of his trajectory, then, you mentioned how he's quite clear in his thinking and stuff like that, and how obviously he clearly has a plan in mind for his vision for the future. Came from Real Sociedad B, of course, and I think he turned down the job at that point, but wanted to make the right step at the right time. He's done that again here. He clearly, you know, we know what he's like as a footballer. He's a very ambitious individual. He's got a very clear thought process, as I say. Like, he must have goals, ambitions for where he wants to be in his managerial career.
Yeah, the plan was, as you say, clear. If it goes badly at Bayer Leverkusen, he goes back to Real Sociedad, perhaps even as number one at Real Sociedad, and keeps improving, because for him, process is absolutely crucial. That doesn't compare very well to other, say, top players. I'm thinking English ones, for instance, that want to jump straight into the top without perhaps doing the kind of learning process that Xavi is doing. I believe more in the Xavi way. And so does he. So if he didn't work well, he knew he had a job at Real Sociedad to replace Imanol Aguacil. In fact, the plan was originally that he was going to be the number one, but Imanol Aguacil was doing so well that Xavi had to move out of there. Bayer Leverkusen made a lot of sense. And I think he always thought, and he still thinks, that if it goes well at Bayer Leverkusen, and he's gone amazingly, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and Liverpool will be the next step. He's 42, so I still think he's going to be in the three of them. I remember talking to Xavi about becoming... When he started getting the coaching badges about becoming the manager of Liverpool, and he says, and when? I said, no, will it be Stevie G or you first? And they were like, the logical step basically is that Stevie G goes first. But of course, he said, he wants to be a Liverpool manager. It will happen. Of course it will. I'm surprised, or maybe I shouldn't be surprised, of how some people are saying, oh, he's bottled it. It's like, obviously, they don't have a lot. Much of an idea of about Xavi Alonso, do they? But in any case, if anybody's disappointed, I would say you are getting a human being, a coach who's trying to learn more. And then also, it's so hard to replace Klopp. But first of all, I think for him, it was like, all right, I need to continue with the job here. And Klopp described it very well. It's had the same thing at Mainz. So it is tempting to jump, and many would have done that. But in the case of Xavi Alonso, he feels he's building something. The club is going to back him. He's going to get it right or wrong, but at Bayer Leverkusen, not at Liverpool. And that means, of course, that whenever he comes to Liverpool, which will happen, he will be a better manager, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting and also absolutely spot on as well, because the world is definitely his oyster when it comes to the world of football management. There's no two ways about that. I mean, look at the job he's doing. It's absolutely incredible. And it's been incredible since day one that Bayer Leverkusen really transformed them when he came into the side, and obviously on the verge of winning the Bundesliga. Who knows about the Pokal and possibly even the Europa League as well. Although, of course, hopefully Liverpool stand in his way when it comes to that. But you're right. I think anyone who's sort of suggesting that he's done it because he didn't want to follow Klopp, that might have been a factor, of course, because you know you are replacing the irreplaceable essentially there. But you're right, I think it is about his own path and his own journey and making sure he makes the next step when he's ready for it. And obviously Champions League football is probably a factor in that as well, and spending a bit more time learning the trade essentially. Yeah, I don't really blame him. I'm gutted, I'm disappointed, but I've got begrudgingly even more respect for Xabi Alonso, because I think it's a smart decision. I think the timing isn't perfect, but then the timing of Klopp leaving isn't perfect either. So worlds did align a little bit, but at the same time, as I say, I can understand it from a personal point of view why he would want to stay and get better as a football manager. Of course I can. Just on that then, in terms of, you said there, like Liverpool feels like it's a destination for Xabi Alonso at some point. There is talk of a release clause in 2025. I think he's under contract at Bayer until 2026. Like, how do you kind of see the future panning out there? Obviously, we mentioned Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, of course, Liverpool. Like, his playing career was so illustrious that it feels like he could do all three of them jobs at some point as a manager.
Yeah, I believe there is no buyer clause, so he'd just be a shake of hands with the club whenever he decides to go. But 2026 sounds about right, staying there. That's when Ancelotti finishes his contract at Real Madrid. That's where we would have had, 2 years of the new manager of Liverpool, post-Klopp, not easy. And then, of course, let's see if Bayern Munich have sorted things out, because if he keeps improving with Bayer Leverkusen and wins titles, it will be certainly a temptation for Bayern Munich to try to keep convincing him. So we'll see. He's his own man. As I said, I mean, they had a plan, and the noise changed that plan within a day. So you're talking about somebody that, not that he's unpredictable, because I do believe these are the targets, but the timing of it is his own, basically.
Yeah, absolutely incredible to speak to somebody obviously as brilliant and as wonderful as Gillian Balagain, obviously a close friend of Xabi Alonso as well. So not from the horse's mouth, but not too far from it either. Next up, I spoke to Neil Jones this week and got his take on the potential of Ruben Amorim coming in at Anfield. Xabi Alonso committing his future to Bayer Leverkusen for reasons which I think we're all relatively understanding of, disappointed by, gutted by, but I do also very much get it. That's kind of left us in a situation with Ruben Amorim very much at the forefront and pretty much instantly installed as the favourite. Fabrizio Romano has been speaking about this, of course. He's mentioned the links to De Zerbi. He's keep repeating himself on that. He says he's told that Ruben Amorim is the favourite option for now. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I was surprised by Alonso committing his future. I thought that was the least likely of all the possibilities that were swirling, but good on him in a way. You know, that's one of the positives around Alonso's rise, or one of the things that was stated was like, well, he's a very methodical, thoughtful, he's not rash, he considers his decisions. So you have to respect that he's considered this one, and they've won the league now, pretty much, haven't they? That was another big weekend for them. With,
well, Tuchel gave it up, didn't he?
With the three, it looks like Bayern gave it up a while ago, to be honest. But I mean, they got another late win, incredible Leverkusen on Friday, and then Dortmund doing that on Saturday, wasn't it? Great for Leverkusen, and you know, I like that. I like that kind of story, to be honest. Regardless of who's involved in it, I like, you know, no one wants to see Bayern Munich win the league, you know, 20 years in a row, really. So that's good for football, I would suggest, if not for Bayern Munich. So yeah, here we are. And I mean, it's really difficult because Klopp's such a one-off, so all your sort of analysis around what Liverpool need or what a new manager has to be, it's all coloured by the fact that, well, something special was there beforehand, so you shouldn't really compare. So, well, he has to be as great in press conferences as Jürgen is. You know, he has to have this style of press and it's the same as Jürgen. He has to be able to connect with his players in this. You know, you want all of those kind of you want all of those things ideally, but you have to accept that probably there's going to be some give and take elsewhere. Amorim's got a lot of boxes ticked and a few that he hasn't, hasn't he? So he's won stuff. That's good. Mm. He's won leagues and cups. He's potentially going to win another league. They've got a huge couple of weeks coming up, haven't they, in terms of that? They've got a game in hand at the top, but they've got Benfica, I think, to play, and Porto, I think.
They've played Benfica twice. They got them in the cup tonight. In the cup,
yeah,
and
all right.
In the league.
There
the
you
weekend,
go, yeah. Yeah. But they've got Porto as well to play before the end of the season. So there's going to be, you know, we're talking about Liverpool in a title race. They're right in the thick of one themselves. But he's won stuff. He's perfect English. So his adaptation period as a manager is not going to be the same as, say, I don't know, but even De Serbi to a degree, who's still, you know, I would say still learning that side of it. But others, if you were coming from elsewhere, he's managed in Europe. Okay, they didn't get as far as they maybe thought they should. Atalanta obviously knocked them out, but he's managed in Europe, so he's dealt with that challenge. I think his record is patchy, but okay, he's got experience of managing in Europe. He's improved players. You look at some of the players in his team at the moment, but look at others who've moved on. Palinha, Matheus Nunes, and they speak about him as, yeah, he gets it. His teams play good football and have a good defensive element to them, whilst not losing too much in the attacking sense. So there's positive. He's worked at a club where you are expected to win, so there is focus and expectation. The obvious downsides of that would be Portuguese league as a manager coming across to managing in the Premier League against Pep Guardiola, against Arsenal, against Manchester United, against Chelsea, where you might not challenge for the title, but you might fall out of the top four if you have an indifferent season. That's how competitive it is. That would be the question mark around him. Can he make that transition? But he's young enough. He's got a decent CV already. Mm. He looks like someone who can go and manage one of the big clubs in Europe. It might not be the perfect time or the perfect situation, but he might just be the sort of the one that you go, well, let's find out.
Yeah, that's the problem with all this, though, isn't it? As you mentioned there, that it's not the perfect time, nor the situation, because no one wanted Jurgen Klopp, first and foremost, as well. Yeah. But you're right, there isn't a standout candidate. It might well have been Xabi Alonso.
Klopp was available.
Exactly.
There's no standout candidate.
Doesn't exist, does it?
And that was, you know, you think back really to when Brendan Rodgers left. The reason that happened really is because Jurgen Klopp was available, wasn't it? You know, and it was the perfect option.
Yeah.
You don't often get that, do you? You don't often get the sort of well, that's just that everything fits into place with that one. You're going to have to take a risk somewhere, and we're probably going to have to accept that there's going to be some teething problems. There's going to be some games where maybe early on you're going, I don't really know what he's trying to do here, or I'm not sure about that sign, or are we playing three at the back now? Or, you know, you might have to swallow that it's going to be different, and people don't like change sometimes, do they? But nothing's going to be perfect. There's no manager out there that I can see, and I include Alonso in that, even though I thought he was the best of the options. There was no manager out there that you go, well, that's the one then, isn't it? You know, some people might say Pep Linders, but that would have been fraught with all kinds of, you know, problems as well, where you're going, well, is he, you know, the first sign of trouble would be, well, he's not a number one, he was always a number two, you know, he only ever managed one side in the Dutch second division. Why we give some, you know, there would always be that question mark. So I think the idea is sort of, I don't know, who's got the least question marks around them, I suppose, would be the way to do it. I mean, I mentioned the big one there for Amorim, but he's got a lot of ticks in the box as well. I mean, there was a couple of managers I thought, I'm surprised that we haven't heard more about them. I thought Simone Inzaghi might be one that you could have saw and thought, well, look what he's done at Inter Milan, and, you know, could he be one? But there would be question marks around him even. So I'm interested to see if it is going to be Ruben Amorim. I think there's enough to suggest that give him a bit of time and he could be a very, very good manager, because he's already done very good things. Maybe a lot of people will be watching Sport in Lisbon over the next few weeks just to get a handle on what he does. Obviously, there seems to have a very specific style of or system that he uses and style of play, but he's definitely doing a good job there, and, you know, that usually leads to a better job.
Yeah, it does. And I think we can all, as you say, shift our focus on Bayer Leverkusen's fixtures and results to Sporting for next few weeks.
At least we can stop worrying. At least we can stop sort of saying, oh, would we like Leverkusen in the final?
Let's not have that. I agree with that, absolutely. Yeah. And I do wonder, you mentioned a moment ago about sort of the translation from Premier League to the Premier League. And it is difficult. The scrutiny and the levels and the competitiveness at the top of it are different, of course they are. But it is still a very competitive league. And we've just spoken about how Liverpool have tapped into
the
Portuguese market and how it has been a good sort of breeding ground, the proving ground for Premier League in the past. I guess it's similar.
That's it, yeah. But of course, then the demands are different, aren't they? So if you're the manager of Benfica, Porto, Sporting Lisbon, and we should probably say this, Sporting are the third of that cartel, you know, it certainly have been in the last 20, 30 years. It's been Porto, Benfica who've been the ones who are in the latter stages of the Champions League more regularly, who are, you know, winning the leagues obviously more regularly. But if you're a manager of them, you've got that pressure and expectation. You've got to win, you've got to develop. But you also know that two or three of your best players are probably going to leave every summer, so you're going to get continually refreshing your team. So it is a little bit of a different challenge. You're maybe going to be tapping into your academy a little bit more, and you know you're not having to deal with as many established superstars. You're getting the ones on the way up who've got that. You're not dealing with the ones who are on £250,000 a week and who, you know, are sort of, I've got 8 years' experience at your club of winning everything. But yeah, the scrutiny is still huge. I think one thing that's definitely in his favour, in Amorim's favour, and would have been in Alonso's favour, is the achievement as a little bit of an underdog, I think, is a massive tick in the box. Because while Liverpool are one of the biggest clubs in the world and, you know, will always be considered in that way, they are taking on a giant and other giants around the Premier League. So you do need to have, I think, an example that, you know, you can bridge those gaps, so you don't, you know, it doesn't become a thing where you go, what am I supposed to do, you know, against these giants, this Porto and Benfica? I can't compete with that. They've got this much budget. They've got this. The fact that he's been able to do that and defy history a little bit, or recent history, is definitely a big positive for him.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like you say, upsetting the natural order, I think, because he's done a little bit in Portugal, definitely falls into the wheelhouse of what he might have to do at Liverpool, given what we're going up against. Just in terms of him to round off then, I mean, I put it there on the agenda, achieved all he can, ? And there's obviously still things to come this season. He certainly hopes in the Cup and the league, of course. But do you think it's good for him? Do you think he'll be okay with this move? And also, there's obviously the discussions about a release clause as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, Alonso, I thought the same about Alonso, to be honest, but I think it's a more obvious time to move. He's been there longer for the start. He's obviously, if he was to win the league this season, it would be his second title. I think he won one in COVID season, wasn't it? And then obviously, he'd have one in a real season.
Well, so there's something in that, by the way.
So, yes. absolutely.
Straight away, I thought that.
So you've got that, you know. I don't see Sporting as being a team that's think, well, actually, we could have a real go at the Champions League. You know, you're probably going to lose his star players, whereas it looks like one of the reasons Alonso's chosen to stay at Leverkusen is he doesn't think that's going to happen with Leverkusen. They're not going to lose Florian Wirtz and Boniface and all the others. I think there's more of an acceptance at Sporting that, you are going to lose your Gonzalo Inacios or Diamandes or Gyökeres, whoever. But I probably would feel a little bit more likely that he would be, you know, I'm ready to go now, and probably that he would go with even more blessing as well, you know, especially if he was to finish with another league title. You know, that would be a hell of a way to end. Just like Jürgen.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully. I think he would be more inclined to make that move, as you say, as well. Yeah.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, boss as ever from Neil, and really knows his stuff. Certainly when it comes to the Portuguese side of things in Liverpool, we've gained a close relationship down the years with that particular league, so it'd be interesting to see if we do indeed go for Amorim. But one of the alternatives, and somebody who this next man has been very keen to stress is very much a contender for the hot seat at Liverpool, is Julian Nagelsmann. So I spoke to Kevin Hatchard, Bundesliga commentator, of course, on whether Nagelsmann could be the right fit for the Reds.
Let's move on to some of the candidates then. Obviously, the standout candidate everyone's talking about appears to be Ruben Amorim over at Sporting Lisbon. But I noticed you brought another name to the fore, and he's not a name a million miles away from the frame either. It's Julian Nagelsmann. I want to spend a bit of time talking about him and the possibility or the prospect of him being the guy. He felt like a little bit of an afterthought to me somewhat, and I guess that's on the back of his stock falling prior to his Bayern Munich time, of course. But did he get a bit of a raw deal on the back of that? And obviously, Thomas Tuchel's tenure now, we know that's coming to an end, and he's not exactly flavour of the month there. So I guess the Bayern Munich job isn't quite as straightforward as people made out.
No, it's a very political job, as we know. And I actually said when Jurgen Klopp announced that he was going to go, the first name that I raised was Nagelsmann, because I've always believed he is a very special coach. You've got to bear in mind, this is a guy that got the Hoffenheim job at the age of 28, youngest ever Bundesliga coach. He'd already done some impressive things at under 19 level with Hoffenheim. And he walked into a relegation battle with a lot of guys in the squad who were older than him or his age. And he was able to not only deal with some of the big characters in that squad, but he actually seemed to seek out some of those big characters in further seasons. And he still gets on really well with Sandro Wagner, who is absolutely a guy who doesn't pull any punches. And he's one of his assistants with Germany now. So you could see very early on, this was a guy tactically who was very good, but also was a good man manager. And he not only got Hoffenheim out of relegation danger, he then went on to take them into the Champions League twice. Once Liverpool knocked them out in the playoffs, that you'll remember. And the other time they went straight into the group stage. And yes, they struggled in the group stage, but it's Hoffenheim. Of course, they're going to struggle in the group stage. So I think he did incredible things there. You look at his work with RB Leipzig, regularly qualified for the Champions League, got into the Champions League semi-finals one season. That was back in 2020 in the COVID era. And so that tempted Bayern to spend a huge amount of money to bring him in. And the first season, he won the league, as he was expected to win the league, of course. They went out of the Champions League to Villarreal, but it was close. And Villarreal gave Liverpool a run for their money in the semi-finals that season. So even though that was seen as a really big misstep, I don't think it's a huge disgrace. It's the kind of thing that can happen against an Unai Emery team. And they only went out courtesy of a very late goal. So I think then he became a convenient scapegoat. And I think it's no surprise that the guys who I believe got rid of him to save themselves, Oliver Kahn and Hasan Salihamidžić, they're no longer at the football club. And what's even more instructive, I believe, is that there's been talk of Bayern approaching him to come back. So I think maybe there is an acceptance at the club that they made a misstep in getting rid of him too quickly. With Germany, he's had a bit of a renaissance in the last international break because, of course, they managed to get wins over France and the Netherlands, which was hugely impressive. I can't remember a more transformational international break. No. So he's a guy who's learned a lot, I think, from what happened to Bayern. Very smart tactically. Gets a bit of a rough deal in terms of people thinking he's not a good man manager. I don't believe that. I think he is. I think he's proven that time and time again. And actually, when he left Bayern, the narrative that got pushed was that he'd lost the dressing room. And actually, guys like Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka came out and said that's simply not the case. You know, we enjoyed working with him and we'd enjoy working with him again. So I think his is a name that should probably have a bit more respect put on it. In terms of whether he would be available, he's been very coy. He's been very keen to keep his options open. The DFB have talked about getting round the table and maybe agreeing a new deal beyond the Euros. And he has said, well, depends what the offer is. And he's also said, if a really interesting club job came on my desk, you know, that's something I might be willing to agree before the Euros even start. So I do think it's a live option. And I've heard that Liverpool might be interested.
Yeah, no, likewise as well. Like I say, he's not a million miles removed from this conversation. Whoever has it, really, always seems to be in and around it. But as I mentioned at the top, he does appear to be sort of a bit of an afterthought in the amongst it, whether that is because he's currently employed by Germany and obviously the timeline doesn't quite work. But we've seen people be able to bend and flex for international management before, so it's not out of the realms of possibility for me. And he'd be one of the more likely candidate in my mind because he fits that age profile as well that Liverpool appear to be going after. Obviously, Xabi Alonso, Ruben Amorim, likewise, and Nagelsmann too, that up-and-coming next big thing type manager. So it's a really, really interesting one for me. Just on him, a bit more detail, and you mentioned tactically he's really astute and stuff like that, but in terms of the tactics he does employ and the way, the brand of football, the style he likes his teams to play, how would you describe that?
Yeah, well, it can be very attacking. You know, they scored a lot of goals under him, Bayern, and he's not wedded to one particular way of playing. You know, he can operate with a three, he can operate with a four at the back. He's kind of flitted between those at times. He's somebody that does like to create overloads, does like to kind of have lots of options in what he calls the red zone, which is kind of in front of the, on the edge of the penalty area. And he played in two different ways last season with Bayern. The way they started was to have a fluid front four, which included Sadio Mane, actually, you know, and they were rotating. And I thought if they'd seen that through, that could have been very exciting for them. And I think last season would have ended up being a lot better. But there was this big debate after Lewandowski went that they needed a centre forward. And he kind of, not quite acquiesced, but I think he was conscious of that debate. They had a run of four straight draws, I think. And so they started playing Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting as a centre-forward. And he did very well. He scored lots of goals. So he is pragmatic in the sense that he will change things. He will look at the opposition. And he's not wedded to one particular way of playing. So I think he's a very, very competent tactical minds, very important with the counter press. He's really, really conscious of that. He talks about that a lot. That chimes with what Jurgen Klopp has done at Liverpool, of course. You lose that ball, you've got to go and win it back as quickly as possible, and you've got to try and win it high. So he does get a lot out of good attacking players. He does play aggressive attacking football. And I think Liverpool fans, having seen his football, would probably take to him.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that as well. And obviously being in the Red Bull model, which isn't a million miles away from what FSG sort of go about, how they go about their business and stuff like that, certainly in the transfer market and recruitment strategies. So yeah, it does feel like a fit that would make some sense. And just in terms of his personality, then you mentioned it a moment ago, obviously following on from Jurgen Klopp, who, as we know, is very much one of a kind and pretty much irreplaceable. I mean, in terms of his character, in terms of his characteristics, do you think there's a fit there? And also, the fact that it is following on from Jurgen Klopp, you mentioned right at the top about how Xabi Alonso might have looked at that and gone, oof, that's a daunting prospect. Is Nagelsmann the type to sort of shirk that challenge, or do you think he just embraced it head on?
I think he'd embrace it head on. He's a guy that, I mean, look at the Germany situation. You know, it's quite unusual for a guy of his age to be willing to take that on. You know, a country with tens of millions of potential managers. So, you know that you're competing against all of those views. You know, he took on Bayern. He was happy to do that. He didn't stay in the kind of comfort blanket of Leipzig. He was happy to make that move. And he's just a guy who has a real force of personality. That can cause problems sometimes in the sense that he's probably a bit too honest sometimes. I think you learned that at Bayern. He's very outspoken about things. Just loves to talk about football, really, in a similar way to the way Jurgen Klopp does, really. So I think sometimes that gets him into trouble. But I like him very much. And, you know, he said very early on in his career that he feels that football management is 30% tactics and 70% social competence. You know, it's about being able to get the best out of these players. I mean, I remember one of the examples when he was at Hoffenheim was that they had these Hoffenheims run by a software billionaire. So they're always at the forefront of all the new tech. And one of the things they had was this kind of drone footage. And what they used to be able to do was stop a training session. And they had these massive screens up at the training ground. And he said, right, we'll stop it. Look at this that we've just played. You should be here. You should be here. All that stuff. He said to the players, if you do X, Y, Z, I'll let you play FIFA on the big screen. And we'll hook up, you know, a PlayStation or whatever it happened to be. And he said, that's what we'll do. I know it's only a small thing, but I think as well, because he's young, he's a bit closer in age to these guys and he kind of understands them a bit more. You know, they listen to some of the same music, you know, watch some of the same stuff. So I think that it's not the be all and end all. And that doesn't mean Jurgen Klopp can't, you know, identify with his players or what have you. But having those touch points, having those references, I don't think does any harm.
No, there's definitely relatability there as well. And I just remembered now when you were talking, he got a little bit of, is criticism the fair word, in the media because he used to go on a skateboard to train and stuff like that. I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, well, that was in the middle of that run of four draws. And I think that took, he was a bit taken aback by that because I think what happened was he got criticised for everything. He's too young. He doesn't wear the right stuff. He doesn't look like a coach. He skateboards. You know, he likes being on a motorbike, things like that. He got loads of criticism for him, not his coaching, not his leadership. It was about him. Mm. And that's just Bayern. You know, Bayern is an enormous deal in Germany. You know, whatever happens at Bayern, that will be national news. So I think that taught him a lot, but also hurt him a fair bit. And I think now with those tools, I think there's no challenge. I think he would believe was too big.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And you mentioned the Hoffenheim training ground now. I spent a couple of days there filming for our Bobby Firmino documentary and got to see the screens you're talking about. And they're very much at the forefront of that sort of technology innovation. So like, there was something inside the training ground as well that essentially popped out lights and a ball would pop out and you'd have to kick it back into a different one. It was really interesting. We got to have a go with it.
That's the version. It's called that the footbanor, I think.
It's all about the mind and how you respond to certain triggers and stuff like that. It was really interesting. But again, that sort of ties in nicely to the way Liverpool think about it. We often get like brain neurologists in and stuff like that to sort of plan ahead that extra bit of percentage. So he's used to that sort of environment as well.
Yeah, the goalkeepers at Hoffenheim, I mean, I imagine this is more widespread now, but the goalkeepers at Hoffenheim used to have these glasses that had strobe lighting and that would improve their reaction times.
Yeah.
I can see why a guy like that, and I know it's been briefed that he's unlikely to be on the list. That's slightly contrary to a couple of the things I've heard, but you never know with these things. They're very fast moving. You never quite know if briefings are accurate and what have you. But if I didn't know anything, you know, you'd say that a data-driven approach, if his name didn't come up, it's probably not the right data-driven approach. So, you know, I would think a guy like that would absolutely come up.
Yeah, brilliant as always. Always a pleasure to speak to Kevin. He's a top fella and definitely knows his stuff. And finally, I spoke to Mark Carey, the data analyst from The Athletic. And we spoke about a host of different potential candidates and how the numbers and how the data looks to them. Because obviously we know Liverpool, led by Michael Edwards, are going to be doing a very data-driven search for the Klopp successor. And we spoke about a few of the options, including, of course, Ruben Amorim.
Hopefully these people we're about to speak about don't pale into insignificance by comparison. The first two I want to talk about are two that you've said that the data appeals for. The first one, and the headline act really, I guess, at the moment, is Ruben Amorim. What is it about him then, I suppose, in terms of the data and the numbers? There's the pros and there's cons. He ticks a lot of boxes, it feels like. He's got a relatively decent amount of experience. He's won a Primera Liga. And also, in the amongst this, I wanted to ask you, and it's something you touched upon earlier, how styles across leagues and how comparable is it and how much you sort, I guess, is sort of bought into that? Because it must be difficult to look at the Premier League and try and compare that to the Premier League. That must be one of the hardest parts of all of this.
Yeah, I mean, starting with that one, I do think that's massively important. It's massively important at the player level as well. I'm sure, you know, it's been discussed about Bundesliga tax and all of that sort of translation. And Darwin Nunez being an example in the Premier League of kind of needing a bit of time to adapt to the physical demands of the league. And I think that holds true at the team level, and of course the league level as well, because of style. Yeah, definitely with style, whether it's more possession based, maybe more aerial based, more physical, whatever it may be. but also kind of the strength and that difference between the top team and the bottom team. And yes, there's a big gap between Liverpool, Manchester City, Arsenal and Sheffield United and Burnley. I get that in the Premier League, but I think from listening to podcasts and speaking to people like those at 21st Group is that I don't have the exact comparison, but I think maybe the lower echelons of the Primeira Liga may be kind of more championship upper echelons of League One in terms of that quality. So naturally, a team like Sporting Lisbon or Benfica or Porto are going to still kind of always rise to the top because they are just notably and will continue to be notably better. So the same with the Eredivisie to a certain extent as well, where these are really good leagues, but that difference between the good teams and those who are fighting relegation is quite big. So you're made to kind of look a little bit better. So yeah, it's all of those things that are factored into it, taking it sort of with a pinch of salt. But in terms of Amorim, you know, what's his pros and cons? I know it's been covered in great depth in the deep dive with Chris and Josh Williams recently. So I won't go kind of too much and you know, duplicate what they've said. But I think that, you know, what one thing they did say, which was absolutely true, is that out of possession, and not just saying that the back line and the defensive side of things is their strength, but just overall from pressing from the front, their real sort of strength in keeping sort of central areas really nice and compact and forcing the opposition to go around them. I think that their defensive numbers are just outstanding. So the numbers on that is that they have conceded this season just 0.66 expected goals against per 90. And for context, Arsenal, who we've lauded as the best out of possession team in Europe, if not the world, are pretty much exactly the same there. So context of what I just said about the league quality, but still it shows that the Sporting are definitely doing something right in terms of the process there. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, defensively, out of possession, they're so strong in that regard, as I say, pressing from the front and sort of keeping those central areas, keeping the opposition out of those central areas. I think another pro is that, again, it's been spoken about from Josh and Chris, that the way that he has dealt with the losses of players, we spoke about Alonso just then in terms of maybe not evidenced it or had the chance to evidence it yet, but the way that in the short space of time that Amorim has been manager, he's lost Manuel Ugarte, Pedro Porro, João Palhinha, Matheus Nunes, Nuno Mendes, all of those young players in recent years and sort of regenerated, and they are top of the Primeira Liga. So I think that's one. Another one that I understand from my colleague David Ornstein, he said that his use of the sports science side of things has sort of been a key sort of tick in the box in terms of how he deals with injuries, keeping players fit. I think that one of his fitness staff, his current fitness staff, used to work at Liverpool. So I think it was a strength and conditioning coach. So that's all kind of, yeah, led to positive sort of signs, should we say, because Liverpool, I mean, every club has got its injury issues, but Liverpool in maybe recent years have had some injury issues and sort of wondering why that might be beyond just kind of bad luck. So that counts sort of really strongly as well. And I think that as Jurgen Klopp has shown across his whole tenure, but specifically this season in terms of promoting youth, we don't have to discuss any more about what, you know, Jurgen Klopp doing that. But Amorim has done that really, really well in the likes of Pedro Porro, Matheus Nunes, as I mentioned before, but Nuno Mendes as well, who's since moved on, of course. But Ousmane Diamande this season, he came basically straight into the team at 18. He's 20 now, but was just trusted in a sort of a role in central defence that is not to be underestimated, straight in, and he's just looked so, so comfortable, but given that trust to be able to sort of play that role. So I think that's... those three, I'd say, have been key. Really strong defensively. Four, actually. Really strong defensively, being able to regenerate the team, dealing with injury or making sure that the strength and conditioning is really strong, and promoting youth. A lot of boxes ticked, I guess, there.
No, it certainly is, yeah. And it's nice to hear, to be honest. In terms of cons, then, are there any standout cons for Ruben Amorim? I mean, sort of... from my point of view, I guess in layman's terms, one of them would be, I guess, not progressing deep into Europe. But again, do you expect Sporting to progress deep into Europe? Since he's obviously been knocked out of the Europa League at this stage as well. So maybe there's something in that, but I don't know if you've spotted anything necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, they overcame Arsenal, didn't they, in the Europa League last season? So I suppose they've shown it a little bit in that regard. Again, the league quality means that it's... it's not necessarily a con, but it's a difficulty to show the sort of the success and translate it. I think maybe they can be not as front-footed or as maybe dominant against the stronger sides within the league when you kind of really want to show that you are outwardly, you know, the best team in that league. So that maybe feeds into the, you know, the strength on the European stage, and it speaks to what I spoke about before in terms of if you can, as a manager, evidence that you are able to, overcome teams who are really high quality, who we know are at elite level, and that opportunity is through European competition. If you are able to show that, then it really gives you bumps you right up to the top of the list. So I'd agree with that. I think that there has been, you know, maybe a little bit of weakness there. I know that they were overcome by Atalanta, of course, and now Liverpool are playing in the Europa League this season, but overcome Arsenal last season. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, I think it is fair to say. But I guess overall, I can see why he's definitely in the short list, if not, you know, the top two or three.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I guess a lot of that sort of European conversation stems from what Jose Mourinho was able to do years ago, being in Portugal as well. But to emulate that feels nigh on impossible. And everyone I've spoken to about Ruben Amorim, I've often brought up the Mourinho comparison, but it appears to be quite a lazy one because they're simply both Portuguese and they both manage football teams. So yeah, that feels like pretty much where it starts and ends. Move on to the next one then, the next guy who the data appeals for. And this one is no great surprise to me, to be honest with you. It's Julian Nagelsmann.
Yeah, wonderful as ever, speaks to Mark. He's been on a few times with me now. He's a top guy as well, and he certainly knows his stuff when it comes to the data side of football. That was Redmen Weekly. Make sure you head to redmenplus.com. We've got all them shows in full. And if you sign up as a captain yearly using the code RACE, you will get that for half price. What's not to love? And as I mentioned right at the top of the show, Premier League title matters, Europa League trophy matters, and of course, manager search, transfers, and all that other good stuff to come. Let's all go and enjoy together. Take it easy.